scores!
Ruiz slides! Rollins has won it! They stream out of the dugout! Yeah. Rollins ball near third! This game is over!
Second deck, walk-off home run! Grand slam, Bryce Harper!
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode 559. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, kind of a bittersweet series against the Dodgers out in Los Angeles, but the Phillies take 3 out of 4. I think that's the headline we want to try to emotionally take away. But of course, we'll talk about the collapse on Sunday afternoon by the bullpen, and we'll talk about the Phil's offense, which was just on fire last week. One guy in particular received an award from Major League Baseball for his performance last week, so we'll talk to you all about that. We'll talk about the bullpen. And we've got a new feature that we're going to be doing every week here on this edition of Hittin' Season. We're going to do that in the last section of the show, so you make sure to stick around for that. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. I don't want to give anybody any more details on it other than to say that. So let's jump right into this here show with Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Of course, Justin, you know from Baseball Prospectus and The Dirty Inning and Continued Success. Follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, what's up, bud?
You know, I don't know if you guys heard, but it turns out that, according to ESPN's The Daily, there is a most interesting man in baseball, and his name is Gabe Kapler, because he is handsome and also analytic. Pretty amazing stuff, right?
I've never heard of this guy.
You wouldn't expect that from a handsome man, for him to be aware of numbers. And that, you know, that's just it. That makes him a very interesting person.
Well, he's also got a perfectly manicured beard, which I think came up in an article I read about him in The Athletic. So,
to be fair, in the episode, they do talk about that he failed in Philadelphia. But, you know, I've never seen anything about his time in Philadelphia in which he was fully like, yeah, you know, I wasn't there yet. I see a lot more. Well, Philadelphia just wasn't ready for
yeah, him. I would so much prefer yeah. And I would so much more appreciate a little bit of self, you know, a little honesty, a little bit more of self-reflection from Gabe Kapler, because he knows he didn't do well here. I mean, come on.
We can all see the number. That was the whole issue. Anyway, we don't have. I'm not doing a whole thing. Not doing a whole thing.
Not
we're past
thing
this.
On Gabe Kapler.
We are legitimately past this. We are. I really do feel that way emotionally. We are past this. We don't have an hour long conversation about him every time we say his name. I just thought it was interesting to throw out there because, you know, he is apparently the most interesting man in baseball. It's just funny to see national outlets kind of jump on that train and how they describe him, just because he's like, you know, oh, a guy who can do push-ups and math didn't exist before now.
I just remember when he was the manager, every conversation with the Phillies was surrounding Gabe Kapler, the manager. And I'm just glad that the focus now is more on the players than on the manager. But you're right. We don't need to dive into a whole Gabe Kapler rabbit hole here. Liz Rocher also joining us from Yahoo Sports and Continued Success. Follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Though I find it really amusing that Gabe Kapler can't even unclench enough to just grow a beard. It has to be perfectly manicured.
Come on. You knew that. Gabe Kapler's not going to be one of the guys that has like a 2-inch of scruff going, you know?
Well, like, no, but it's like he does this every day, I'm sure. Every single day. It's just imagining him in the real world is a trip for me.
It really kind of is. It's hard to believe like that he goes to the supermarket, or you know that he
dry cleaners.
Would order something on Amazon. You know, just you know something that normal people do as a matter of, you know, everyday life. It is hard to imagine that Gabe Kapler is actually like one of us. But
guys, we're still talking about.
We're still talking about. all right, let's
the one who brought him up, man. Let's
yeah,
not forget
that.
Psycho Liz stuff. God, enough already. Jeez.
Let's shift gears and let's talk about this Phillies Dodgers series, which heading into Sunday, man, we were ecstatic with how they played. And for most of the game on Sunday, it sure looked like the Phillies were going to finish off an unbelievable, unreal 4-game sweep of the Dodgers in Los Angeles. And of course, on Sunday afternoon, there was another meltdown by the bullpen, and the Phillies let one get away. I'm glad we did not record this podcast on Sunday afternoon right after the game, because I think we would not have been in our right mind to do it. And I think, Justin, when we were talking on Slack or on text or whatever it was, you said it really well. And then it just took the wind out of the sails of that was a perfect description.
Yeah, and I invented that phrase. I had never heard that.
Never heard it before. Thought it was just, you know, brilliance on your part.
Yeah. I agree. You know what? I was thinking about it today. And you know what? If I wish that loss had happened in the first game of the series.
Yeah.
Because if it did, we would be talking about how I was sitting here ready to talk about how, like, from the first swing of the first game, Rhys Hoskins swung at the very first pitch and popped out. But I remember thinking, you know, that was pretty aggressive, and especially for Rhys. And if they approach this series with like a really aggressive mindset, that's probably the best way to go about facing the Dodgers, a team that you would say coming in, the Phillies don't really have a chance to necessarily sweep at home or at their home or even win the series. I mean, but going into game four, and that's what made this so disappointing, going into game four, they absolutely, you know, obviously had that chance. And you're like, well, now I'm expecting them to do it because
they took it to them, which is really what, they really did.
Because look at them, you know, it's not like everything was working perfectly, but everything was working to an extent. I mean, there was some really good defense in this series. There was obviously some offense that kept coming and kept hitting back when they would get hit. The first two games were so back and forth. And I mean, I really feel like it came down to them being super aggressive. I'm not just crediting that with Rhys Hoskins swinging at the first pitch. I'm talking about like Gene Segura's base running in game one, where he was being really intelligent and very aggressive on the base paths. I mean, you know, knowing that this pitching staff has excelled at getting on top of hitters and crushing them, that the Phillies countered by refusing to be in the batter's box long enough to get cornered in 0-2 and 1-2 counts. And lo and behold, they did. They looked very aggressive in the box, on the base paths. Every run this team scores is crucial because no lead will ever be safe. But, you know, quick side note. Is there anything more incredible than Cody Bellinger's numbers versus Zach Wheeler entering this series? I don't think I was aware of that. That was insane. No. But, you know, he was a couple of nose hairs from his sixth home run off him at one point. But, again, Dave Dombrowski said this team battles, and I was mocking him for that whole thing, that whole section of quotes. But this series was like, it was that. They battled. And Gene Segura's quote about, you know, I look forward to us being that team where the Mets are like that team right now, that they're like the main character of the NL East, where everything that happens to them. And, you know, them winning is like the story. And he was like, I'm looking forward to us becoming that team. And we talked about that. And this series looked like they were that team. So I just wish that loss had happened in game one so that it would be out of our heads by now. But it was just a really, really rough way to end the series, because then you think back and you're like, you know, they did almost lose the first two games of this series when they looked like they had it in hand. And that's when you start getting in your head about, like, you know, just like negativity in a series that they won against the best team in the National League in their home stadium. So, like, I want to feel positive about this, but the Phillies just can't do that without reminding you of all the ways they also can let you down. So it's just, It's a shame that that's the freshest memory from this series, because there was a lot of great stuff that happened. But I found myself exhausted by the end of that last game, because I went into it finally thinking, hey, this is fun. I'm having fun. We're watching the Phillies. They're taking it to the Dodgers. They're being aggressive. They look like the better team. The Dodgers aren't getting any breaks. The Phillies are getting all the breaks, and they're taking advantage of them, and they're just playing better. So that was. It was a lot of fun to see that happen, but I wish that they could have gotten out of Los Angeles without reminding us that, like, hey, don't forget, we're also flawed.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the bullpen, because the bullpen, I think, for the first month had been relatively okay, had been doing its job, but the warts are showing up right now. So I want to get into the bullpen in a little bit. But Liz, I really do feel like I think Justin hit on it, the attitude of the Phillies coming into this series was much different. And I think it caught the Dodgers flat-footed. I mean, there was, like he mentioned, Gene Segura tagging up from third on that short fly ball into, you know, it couldn't have been more than 20 feet on the grass in right field. I think it was a Gavin Lux who caught
the
pop up.
Just lollipopped the throwback in. Yeah. He wasn't thinking about it. It was like Cole Hamels throwing a first when Bryce Harper stole home on him. It was just like an intelligent player seeing something and being like, I can do this. And it was great.
And they did it against Walker Buehler and Julio Urias in two of these games. Just not just having good at bats against them, but you know, really batting them around, and lots of 3-run home runs in this game. So you finally got, you know, the fastest way to put a crooked number on the board is that 3-run homer, and the Phillies did that on a couple of occasions in this series. And my buddy Mark Constant put this note out, and I just couldn't believe it. After the first 3 games of the series, 29% of the runs the Dodgers had given up all season came from the first 3 games of the Phillies series. They had given up 71 runs in their first 29 games, and then they gave up 29 runs in 3 games. So the Phillies in 3 games accounted for almost 30% of the runs the Dodgers had given up the entire season those first 3 games.
Wasn't there another stat, and this is off the top of my head, but like they're one of 3 teams to have scored 8 runs in 3 straight games at Dodger Stadium? Like that was...
Yeah.
Out there as well.
what I have is most runs by a visiting team in a 3-game span in Dodger Stadium history. The Phillies, their 29 runs are tied for third. Only the White Sox and Giants with 31 runs in 3 games can match what the Phillies did. So
that's crazy. Like that's a switch being flipped. That's not who this team was coming in. That's who we thought they would be, and that's who we wanted them to be. But that was not this team, and they just looked like they became that team for like 3 games, and then you know.
Well, in the start of the game, and Liz, the start of the game on Sunday, because they jumped out to that 4-0 lead. It looked like they were just going to continue on in that. I think it was the second inning when they scored 4 runs, and Nick Castellanos comes up with the bases loaded and isn't able to add on more, but you think, hey, we got a 4-run inning. That's a real good inning. Later in the game, of course, the Phillies load the bases again with 2 outs. Odubel Herrera's at the plate, swings at a ball that goes between his legs somehow, and then isn't able to convert that opportunity. The Phillies just all series long were tacking on crooked numbers one after the other, and on Sunday just weren't able to do that. And you could feel as that game went along, like, man, the Dodgers, they're still in this, and they're just creeping up, and it started to feel more like a loss. So where are you on this series as a whole now that you've had 24 hours to digest what happened on Sunday afternoon?
I still feel pretty good about it on the whole. I mean, the loss was demoralizing. The Phillies really know how to lose after finally putting up, you know, a great series, a great road trip. They certainly know how to lose and make us all feel like crap. But I'm still largely happy with what I saw. You know, and this is one of those moments where the Phillies' reputation as being very bad actually plays in their favor because they can turn it on. I don't think we ever had any doubt that the Phillies would be able, as constructed, could do something like this.
Yeah.
But, like, the Dodgers underestimating them, it felt like a legitimate thing. They weren't trying hard because they didn't feel like they needed to try hard. You know, this time it worked out in the Phillies' favor. And I feel like if they ever have like 2 bad games, some teams will come in and think, well, these are the Phillies I remember. They're terrible. We can win these games without trying too hard.
I think that's a fair point that the Dodgers took the Phillies lightly. And I think the Dodgers might have been smelling themselves a little bit too.
Very much so. I mean, as they're wont to do all the time.
Yeah. I mean, they came into the series against the Phillies with a team-wide ERA of 2.25.
Wow.
I mean, which is just insane. And then after the first 3 games, it had risen to 2.82, which was still the best ERA in the National League. But what the Phillies did to them, and really what specifically Bryce Harper and Gene Segura were doing to them in that series, and really all week, I thought one of the most fascinating statistics was, again, heading into Sunday, if you looked over the previous 7 days, Bryce Harper had added 1.2 wins above replacement to his total in 7 days, given the way he played. Gene Segura added 0.9 wins above replacement.
And Bryce didn't even play in the last game.
He didn't even play in the last game on Sunday. Exactly. Well, I mean, and we got a shout out. Bryce Harper was named National League Player of the Week this week. Shockingly, his first time as a Philly. I would have put solid money on the fact Bryce Harper had won a National League Player of the Week honors as a Philly before now, especially having won the MVP last year. But Harper slashed .609, .643, .1261. .1261 slugging percentage for Bryce Harper last week. 8 runs, 6 doubles, 3 homers, 9 extra base hits for crying out loud. 8 RBIs, 4 walks, 3 stolen bases. Harper is only the second Phillies player since 1901 with 9 or more extra base hits, 8 or more runs, and 3 or more stolen bases in a six game span. The great Juan Samuel, the only other Philly to do that in June of 1986. And then per MLB PR, Harper is the fifth player since 1901 to bat 600 or better with at least 9 extra base hits and 3 stolen bases across a 6-game span, joining Fernando Tatis Jr., Hall of Famer Joe Morgan, some guy named Ken Henderson in 1972, and Hall of Famer Ty Cobb. That's a weird and eclectic list of players there. But, you know, Bryce Harper with the UC, you know, we now know he got an injection. He's in his elbow, kept him out of the game on Sunday, might keep him out of the game on Tuesday night. But, you know, any worries about him being able to play with his elbow injury, Justin, have been squashed because it sure looks like the elbow really isn't bothering him at the plate.
Nope. And the theory that it might have been put forth by me and a flawed sense of logic in our last episode has been put to bed, certainly at the plate. I mean, because, yeah, he was it's inarguable that he was the engine of this offense, despite not playing in all 4 of the games against the Dodgers. I mean, it's just he put up truly frightening numbers against the Dodgers, which is exactly what you want a Bryce Harper to be fully primed. I mean, that's where you were going into this series thinking like, oh man, 4 games against the Dodgers at home. Like, how's a team like the Phillies that has just not really gotten hot yet this season really going to fare? And that's why I think it was so important to look like they were already taking a different approach. And like you're saying, to take advantage of the fact that the Dodgers may have been just being like, okay, here comes the speed bump. We got this. But yeah, you know, as a side note here, did the Dodgers lose a series to the Pirates right before this series? Like they were already sagging a bit. But that being said, that's when you need your Bryce Harper to be fully engaged. And look at him go, even without playing in the field. I mean, that was crucial. Gene Segura was crucial. And, you know, I feel like we're going to get into individual performances in a little bit here. But I want to point out here that Johan Camargo played some amazing defense in this
series. Yeah, he did.
Mm-hmm. One game in particular, I can't remember if it was 2 or 3, but he made like 3 game-saving plays at third that just were that were exactly what the Phillies needed, that they didn't know they could get, that they're not necessarily that's not their reputation. That's exactly what we were talking about. That like, oh yeah, they're a weak defensive team, but then you have Camargo out there just like stopping the ball. You have Bryson Stott making great catches. That he made a catch in Game 4 where he just jumped like 3 feet off the ground and snared a line drive out of the air. I mean, that was awesome. Like there's plenty of, like, you don't need to necessarily look for silver linings in a series that you won, but it was really awesome to see these like other contributions, more so than just the Bryce Harper being the engine of the offense thing. Cause that's, I mean, more than apparent when you look at his numbers and the fact that he won NL Player of the Week. So yeah, I was greatly encouraged by a lot of the individual performances in this series, Bryce Harper obviously being number one.
Speaking of great performances, Gene Segura, since the beginning of May, has been batting .432 in 12 games.
You know what's funny?
That's a long time.
The famous picture, well, not famous. Like, I mean, it's famous, but like the clearly scripted picture of, like, you know, the Phillies' best hitters walking down the foul line, and it has all their names in it. But it's just the 5 of them: Castellanos, Schwarber, Harper, Hoskins, and Realmuto. And there's even like an empty space where another guy could go, and Gene Segura is just not in that picture, and that just sucks because he has been a big offensive contributor before this year, and the fact that he's just not in that picture and there's a space for a 6th guy like right there is just it's comical to look at it.
That's
now.
That's really annoying. That's really really annoying. Wow.
I wrote a story for The Good Fight this last week about, it was a Gene Segura appreciation post, essentially. He really has been an incredibly underrated player for the 4 years now that he's been with Philadelphia. He's been very consistent.
We did try to blame him for Andrew McCutchen's
right, I mentioned that in the story too. Yeah, we did. We did. The whole Gene Segura hustle narrative was out there. And the fact that he took a hammer to Andrew McCutchen's knee and smashed it to smithereens. I think that was well covered.
Yeah, went out there and tackled him. Yeah, right in front of his kids. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just can't believe he did that either. But, you know, he's been productive since then. I was looking at this StatCast data. Gene Segura, at one point last week, was number one on this list. He's now number two. But the largest increase year to year in hard hit percentage, Gene Segura is second in baseball. He has increased his hard hit percentage 15.3%. From 37.4 to 52.7. 52.7% of his batted balls are considered hard hit, which is, as I'm looking at the data here, 16th in Major League Baseball. But, of course, StatCast doesn't, like, limit the number of plate appearances. That's out of 183 players.
He's only struck out 11 times this month.
Right, exactly. He's been putting the bat on the ball and putting the bat on the ball and hitting it hard everywhere. He really has been. And making great defensive plays, too. Because that's the other thing that goes underappreciated about Gene Segura, Liz, is the fact that he is really the only true, reliable defender on the infield, for the most part.
It is really bothersome to me that people seem to forget him. And I'm guilty of that, too. But, you know, if you look at him, he is kind of a beefy boy. And I invite the world to start considering him to be one of them.
If he keeps this up, absolutely. And, you know, Justin, the other thing Gene Segura does is he does steal you some bases. He uses some speed for you. I think right now he's probably the front runner for National League starting second baseman in the All-Star game. I know there are guys with bigger names, but I don't think there's a more deserving candidate right now. I don't have the leaderboard in front of me. I can pull that up while we're talking about him. But as of right now, I think he's the best second baseman in the National League at this moment.
That just goes to show you. Even we said in our last episode when I asked you who's the Phillies All Star. I asked Liz and Chris as well. None of us said Gene Segura. We all said Nick Castellanos. And I mean, you know, that's also a very fair pick. But at the same time, it does overlook Segura's contributions. And like you said, he stole two bases in this series that were also very crucial. Only Nick Castellanos stole a base other than Gene Segura among Phillies regulars in this series. Like, he just stole one. Like, you know, he's not like a speedster by any means. So Segura played a great series. He is, I think he's made some gaffes in the past, but at the same time, he looked like a very aware, intelligent, and locked-in baseball player for all four of these games. Like, he was absolutely tremendous. I don't think he had a walk this whole series, but who cares? When he's hitting the ball as hard as he is, that doesn't matter. You don't need to rely on walks. So, yeah.
Well, here's the thing about the walks thing. And as I'm looking at the numbers, Gene Segura is fourth among National League second baseman in terms of FWAR right now, behind Jeff McNeil, Tommy Edman, Jazz Chisholm, who's having an amazing season with the Miami Marlins, has a 1.6 WAR. Gene Segura is at 0.9. But of course, you know, look, some of his WAR numbers are brought down by his defensive numbers, which I don't quite understand according to Fangraphs. So again, WAR is not the end all be all, especially when it doesn't tell the story I wanted to tell. I think with Gene Segura and really with this Phillies offense as a whole, it kind of changes every day right now. When they're doing well, that there's a different hero that emerges every game. In one of the games out in Los Angeles, Bryson Stott had four hits and got on base every plate appearance. You know, there's just, when you're a good team, everybody contributes, and when you're a bad team, nobody contributes. And the starting rotation has to get a little bit of love here this week, too, especially in this weekend series. Zach Wheeler pitched really well. Ranger Suarez had to give them innings the other night because the bullpen in that 10-inning game just got used way too much, and he went seven. Aaron Nola certainly deserved much better than what he got on Sunday, going seven innings. So the starting rotation deserves a little bit of credit too here, because the offense gets all the publicity, both positively and negatively, but the rotation has done a really good job. Did a really good job in this Dodgers series too. We'll slide a break in here. We'll tie up some other loose ends here. Talk about the bullpen when we get back, because there is a conversation that we do need to have with regards to the Phillies bullpen. That's coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So we were talking about the offense before the break, and lots of good things to talk about with regards to the Phil's offense over the past week or two. The bullpen, a different story. And of course, even in the games the Phillies won this week, the bullpen really did not shine, specifically the game on Sunday. And I'll just give you some numbers here. Corey Seidman put this number out.
I'd rather you didn't, but please continue.
All right.
I have to. It's my job.
I have to. It's a Phillies show.
It's a Phillies show. I know. I keep telling you, we have to talk about them. We have to. The Phillies bullpen is allowing an average of 1.5 base runners per inning. That is too many. Knebel, Hand, Familia, Dominguez, and Alvarado have combined to allow 31 walks and 7 hit by pitches in 60 and a third innings so far this year. The bullpen's ERA now stands at 4.38. That's fourth highest in Major League Baseball. They are striking guys out, 10.05 strikeouts per nine, but the problem with the Phillies bullpen has been the control. 4.67 walks per nine, last in Major League Baseball. And watching Corey Knebel, I swear, so he looks, you know, he reminds me a lot of Brad Lidge, just with the way his fastball, he throws like a 96 mile an hour fastball. It's pretty straight, doesn't move a whole lot. He's got to locate it in order for him to get swings and misses with it. And he has a curveball, which looks a lot like Lidge's slider did back when it was really good in 2008. But he's got this two-pitch mix. And if he actually reminds me a little bit of Hector Neris as well. Like, if he's not controlling his fastball and commanding it in certain spots, he's going to get in trouble. And in the game on Sunday, there are a couple of times where Stubbs was calling for a fastball in a certain location, and he missed wildly with it. And the ball ended up, I think it was it Bellinger who hit the triple?
Yes.
With two outs? On the triple, he wanted it up and away, and he threw it down and in. So the problem with Knebel sometimes, if he's not commanding that fastball, he will get hit around. And then, gave up a walk. And then, of course, the double to Luck, to Gavin Lux, of all people. I know he was a top prospect a couple years ago, but he's been lousy. It just, that's a game you shouldn't lose because you got your first two guys out, and then you just can't close the door. I am curious, Liz, where you are with regard to confidence levels in Corey Knebel right now as your closer.
I mean, it's not that high, I would say, given what we've seen lately. I always find it hilarious that just as the Phillies have to be huge, huge offensively, because when the bullpen is bad, it's not just regular bad, it's like super duper terrible. It's like brain meltingly awful. And I just found, in that context, I found like the first three games against the Dodgers to be pretty hilarious. They put up all those runs, thank God. But, I would assume that the bullpen can't do it all year, right?
Why would you assume that?
What?
That's an insane thing to say.
I can't believe what I'm hearing. Yeah, of course they can.
Absolutely, it could be way worse than this.
Oh, sure, but you were asking me about Knebel, at least, and he certainly can't keep that up all year, or he won't be on the team in a month.
Well, I think he's been, Justin, just good enough at the moment. I mean, the two blown saves that he's had, and I guess really every blown save is brutal. But obviously the one against the Mets when they blew that late lead in the ninth inning. And then yesterday when he gets those first two outs, it's a game you can close the door, and then he can't do it. The problem with Knebel, who has a 3.6 ERA so far this year, is that he only has a 22% strikeout rate. And for your closer, I feel like you need a guy who's in the 30s. Most teams that you expect to be World Series contenders have a closer who'll strike out more than 30% of the hitters that they're going to face. And I think the problem, like I said, is that he's got to command the fastball. He's got to command the four-seamer because he doesn't have a two-seamer that's going to move. He doesn't have a way to kind of, get guys off the fastball unless he's dropping that curveball in there for strikes. But if a hitter's guessing right on the curveball and Knebel throws it over the plate, it's probably going to get whacked somewhere because it's not a pitch. You basically have to pitch off of your fastball in order for that pitch to work. And so I'm a little concerned about Corey Knebel as this team's closer. And I guess another question is, if it's not Corey Knebel, who is it? Is it Brad Hand? Is it Jury's Familia? Do they let Anthony Dominguez do it? I don't know what the option is. It's probably got to be Knebel, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was saying shut up. But at the same time, there was no one from the current Phillies bullpen that I feel like you could say was going to be the obvious answer. I mean, again, it's early enough, but you want your closer to be a guy who can throw the best pitch you've ever seen 20 times, and then he needs to go take a nap. Like, that's the closer. That's a closer. And Knebel doesn't have that pitch right now. I think that's what you're saying, and I'm agreeing with you. That, like, he's not able to absolutely drop the hammer on hitters. And, maybe that comes a little later. Like you said, he just works a four-seam or curveball combination. That's it. That's what he's got. So that stuff's got to be as good as it's ever been for him to be as effective a closer as the Phillies need him to be. And it just hasn't been there the last few times. I mean, that's just how it is. He's among the top few pitchers among the Phillies who are allowing the highest line drive percentage. It's not what you want to see. We've seen, you keep saying, oh, he reminds me of Hector Neris. Hector Neris' biggest problem was that he allowed base runners every time he came on the field. And sometimes he got out of it, sometimes he didn't. But the last thing we need is a closer who's going to allow base runners, because we've seen this bullpen can allow any number of runs to come in. This bullpen is not strong enough. This bullpen needs a stopper. It needs a closer like what we were talking about before the season, the way Dave Dombrowski was talking. It sounded like this team was going to be making Kenley Jansen a priority, and they just, you know, he went to Atlanta and they just didn't.
Yeah.
So they went with a couple other guys. And, you know, once again, we're looking at a Phillies bullpen that focused on acquiring relievers, perhaps, who were going to rehab here, and they simply did not. Familia is not any. He wore a lot of, I think, people's frustrations coming out of this series. He was somebody who had a lot of the blame for the loss in Game 4, and he has come up short in many of his other opportunities as well. So I feel like, with, you know, in regards to Knebel, he needs to just get his stuff on a closer's level, because there's not necessarily anybody breathing down his neck. I don't think he should feel any pressure there. There's nobody behind him who's like, oh yeah, no, my stuff's lights out and I'm going to take your job. But, you know, at the same time, I still do like Sir Anthony Dominguez. I still like what he's been able to do this season, even though it's nice to just see him back on the field. But yeah, this series was very frustrating to watch from a bullpen perspective. It was very easy to imagine them losing the first two games of this series because we'd already seen them. I think we're all still thinking about the Mets game where they did exactly that. So, yeah, I want to see sharper stuff from Knebel, because I don't trust a lot of the other guys Joe Girardi goes to in late innings.
I was just, Liz, looking at some potential closers at the trade deadline the Phillies might be able to go after. I think a name to keep an eye on, and I'm going to do it, because, you know, how many more of these can we watch? And you know Dombrowski is going to be hunting for relievers at the trade deadline. There's just no way you can feel good about the state of this bullpen. And I haven't seen this guy pitch a whole lot, but I'm trolling through teams that have no shot at doing anything this year, and hey, I stumbled on the Pirates. The Pirates have a guy named David Bednar, who is, 27 years old. He has a 1.00 ERA so far this year. Has seven saves for the Pirates, is striking out 12.5 batters per nine and walking only 1.5 batters per nine innings. So allowing a batting average of, hang on, I had that in front of me here just a second ago, allowing a batting average of 131. With a whip of 0.61, throws hard. He throws about, averages like 97 miles an hour on his fastball. So I'm not saying that the Phillies are definitely going to go out and get him or necessarily, but I think that's the kind of player they need to go out and be searching for, is, you know, somebody for a team who's closing, that's having success, that is going to be playing for a team where you don't really need a closer, and the Phillies have to give something up to get a guy like that. But I don't feel comfortable turning over the closer's job to anybody else other than Corey Knebel right now, because maybe Sir Anthony Dominguez. I agree with you, Justin. If it was any one of those guys, that's probably the guy I would give it to. Liz, of the other options in the bullpen, if it's not Corey Knebel, who would it be?
I mean, my answer was also probably Sir Anthony Dominguez. You know, I don't... Yeah. Really trust anybody else. It would be great if the Phillies could go and get someone good at the deadline. I would love to know how their definition of someone good differs from our definition, because I feel like it does differ, which we've seen over and over again. You know, this will be the first trade deadline where Dombrowski will be fully loose, let loose and free to do whatever he wants, as opposed to last season when he...
Yeah, with no luxury tax implications, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're already over. So, you know, what's the point of watching out? Like, if you're going to watch out for that, then you're not going to sign anybody else. And the Phillies can't afford to do that. I think that's probably something they should look for. And I would hope that, you know, Dombrowski would go out and do it, because his acquisition, I mean, Kyle Gibson worked out fine. I don't remember, who did they bring in as a bullpen piece? I don't remember off the top of my head, but I also don't recall being terribly impressed by him. So I worry, because that was such a letdown last year, but, you know, maybe this year will be different. Dave Dombrowski is now fully in charge. You know, he's, you know, fully at school. He's no longer on his gap year. So
right.
Hopefully we can see something.
He's enrolled in classes and everything. You know what I mean? Like, yeah,
exactly.
I agree. They've already gone over the tax. They've already spent the money. Nick Castellanos and Kyle Schwarber are sitting there, and you're like, you know, you might be getting, I really didn't think we were going to see another MVP type season from Bryce Harper, but based on this last week, he's now back up among the National League leaders in every offensive category. And so that's what you're getting. You're getting another MVP type season from Bryce Harper here. Still been the very early in the going here, but just a tremendous offense that is, it looks like as the weather is starting to get a little bit warmer, is start, and just offense is up all around baseball over the past couple of weeks as the weather has been warming a little bit, which is also good to see. So this week they have a really tough schedule still. Obviously we've talked about this May schedule and how brutal it was going to be. The Phillies went to Seattle, took 2 out of 3, and then took 3 out of 4 from the Dodgers in Los Angeles. So certainly a better road trip than any of us could expect it. And so my expectations have been raised a little bit here for this upcoming homestand where the Phillies are going to welcome in the San Diego Padres, who have they passed the Dodgers in the NL West? I haven't looked at the standings. I'll do that as we're talking, but you get the Padres for 3 and then the Dodgers come into Philadelphia for a rematch where I'm sure the Dodgers, if they were taking the Phillies lightly last weekend, will not be taking them lightly when they come into Philadelphia. And right now in the NL West, the Dodgers are tied with the Padres atop the NL West with just a couple percentage points separating them. I feel like our expectations should be raised a little bit based off of what we saw in Los Angeles. We've seen, Justin, a team that can play with the best team in the National League.
You literally can't not raise your expectations, he said to his reflection in the mirror. But this is why, again, I wished the last game of this series was the first one. But yeah, that's putting all that behind us in the first segment of the show, and we're walling it off. And because of that, again, statistically, you can't be anything but more expectant of this team going into a homestand after both those series, like you said, after that West Coast road trip, 2 series in a row. You know, that's something. I guess the idea here is if this team was gonna get hot, they were gonna have to start to get hot, and this is that opportunity to build off this. And if they win, like, you know, if they do well on this homestand, win more games than they lose, then you can say they're a hot team. I think that's fair. You know, they may look a little sloppy because they looked sloppy in certain ways in the Dodgers series as well, and on this West Coast trip. But at the same time, you look at the record, you look at what they put up W's instead of L's, and you gotta just, again, self, you gotta just be encouraged by this. You have to be. You can't. You can't not be. Or what are you? What are you? Just a miserable cretin looking at yourself over the bathroom sink. So you can't do that. You gotta be encouraged by this. And you know what else? The best record in the last 10 games in the National League is 6-4. So everybody's just kind of playing, you know, not playing their best and maybe playing a little bit above their heads right now. It's a very balanced league in the last 10 games. And the Phillies are one of those teams who's 6-4. So this is a half step better than the Phillies we've been watching recently. This feels like they're, you know, a couple footholds above the first foothold. We're still before Memorial Day, so nothing is even set in stone yet. They're in a good spot to capitalize on some recent success. Okay?
Okay.
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 It's real. It happened.
Why are you yelling at me? I didn't do anything. I'm with you.
I'm not yelling at you. I'm yelling at me.
Stop yelling at Liz. You're yelling at the poor Liz.
You're not yelling. Liz, you're just disappointed.
No, I'm not. I'm encouraged.
He's encouraged.
I feel
don't
great.
You hear it in the tone?
You can hear it in my voice. I'm very excited to continue watching this baseball team.
My God, we're all broken.
Yes, they broke us a while back, and we're just barely hanging on. Liz, so these next 6 games, 3 against the Padres, 3 against the Dodgers, how many do they win?
I'll be bold and say they take 4 out of 6.
4 out of 6.
I guess, is
Justin,
that bold? I don't know.
I think that's bold. These are the 2 best teams in the NL West. Absolutely, I think that's bold. I know it's at home, but I think picking them to, I don't know if you're, you know, maybe they sweep one team and lose 2 out of 3, or you know, they win both series. It doesn't really matter if they go 4-2 over these next 6 games. I think that would be a big victory for this team if they're able to do that.
Yeah.
Justin, how many games do they win?
What's the math on if they went 4-2, And so, like, in their last four series, should they go 4-2, what would their record be for those four series? Do the simple addition I'm failing to do in my head.
So if they did, like, what are four series of 4-2?
No, so they beat the Mariners 2 out of 3, they beat the Dodgers 3 out of 4. Let's say they beat the next two teams 2 out of 3. Like, what's their total record for those four series?
Oh, okay. So 2-1 against the Mariners, and then 3-1 against the Dodgers.
They'd be 9-4. And, I mean, that is a great record in their last 13 games. Some math that's very easy to calculate in one's head.
I'm glad we didn't take the time to stop and count it out, that we were able to just kind of roll right through.
Well, that's an adult level of math to do in your head, right? Yeah. Like, that's the kind of math you tell a child. You don't need to calculate 4 plus 4. You need to just know it's 8. Like, that's, and so every adult just has that in their head by default.
Just has that in their heads. You're right. There was a way that I think you're 100% right. So you didn't answer my question, though. How many games did they win?
Right. So I have to say that they would go 4-2 based on that whole thing I just did. But also, I think that they could. You know, they won their last two series. They look like a different team. They could do it. Right?
Right.
Right. They could do it. They looked sharp enough. You're right. We didn't talk enough about the starting pitching. Aaron Nola put together another solid start. I said I needed till the end of the first half with him making starts like this. We're not at the end of the first half, but he keeps doing it. So, hey, that's pretty cool. Wheeler looked good. Gibson, Ranger Suarez, you know, it was stuff you can believe in. It's stuff that was building a foundation of trust. And I was just describing that. So what I'm saying is, by capitalizing on that, we can also just feel good about this team's chances playing in front of a home crowd against two of the best teams in the National League West, based on every aspect of their team except the bullpen. And if our projections are correct, that this is a bullpen that has some guys who suck in it, but also other guys who we don't expect to be performing on this same level for very long, then maybe this is the time that the bullpen isn't performing in that way either. So I feel like this team's hot enough, it's getting enough breaks, and it could really rack up some really important wins here. So I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say 4-2. I feel like that is totally realistic.
You spent quite a long time convincing yourself there, buddy.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show. You know, just welcome to this. We've been sitting here for how many years waiting for a team to look as good as this team has, kind of cosplaying as a team that can do that right now? I don't know. I have trust issues. What do you want from me?
I think this was the most impressive series the Phillies have played.
Absolutely.
Oh, 100%.
Since the rebuild began. The only other one I would compare it to is when they swept the Mets last year. I think it was part of their 8-game winning streak. But remember that big series, New York came to town, and the Phillies showed up, and that was when they jumped in front of the Mets in the NL East.
Yeah,
that was, it was on the Mets alumni team that eventually weekend. Cratered.
John, that was like 6 years ago. So yeah, this is why I have trust issues.
Well, I think they'll go 3-3 over these next six, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing either, because then they go down to Atlanta for a series after that, and against the Braves team that's struggling too. But I heard everything you said. I guess I'm still just a little bit more cautiously.
How are you more cautious than me? Oh, I don't like this. I don't like this at all.
Yeah, we're in a weird place right now. Let's step away and we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to do something fun and do something special.
Was this not fun for you guys? I feel like I sounded like I was having fun the whole time.
No, it was more funner than I thought it would be. But we're going to do something even more or funner in the next segment. So we'll do that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So Liz has a book that she's going through, and once we're going to be partaking in some good times here with this, and I'm mangling the introduction. I'm just going to let Liz talk now. Liz, go ahead.
So at a thrift store antique place somewhere in the last few years, I acquired a book, the first book in the Play It Your Way sports book series called Can You Win the Pennant? This is one of many Choose Your Own Adventure knockoffs from the 80s. And this one is all about sports. There are, depending on where you look, there are 4 or 5 books in the series. No one can seem to make up their mind. But there are 2 others about baseball, one about opening day and one about World Series pressure. And they're all written by the same guy, a man named Mitch Gelman, who I think is now in radio somehow. But this is a book published in 1983, which is the same year I was born. So it's important to keep in mind what baseball was like then, because a lot of this is going to sound kind of hilarious. So I'm going to introduce everyone. This is the sort of the lead into the book to where we make our first important decision about winning the pennant. Are we all ready?
Okay, so it's we're gonna choose our own adventure here, gang. So cozy up to the old podcast radio and let's listen.
Yes. I'm gonna choose to win the pennant.
No, you have to wait for her to read.
I see. Okay.
So, and if we have any comments as we go along, feel free to stop me and we can discuss them.
How much cocaine is in the book?
None at the moment. This is a children's book and they chose to.
Oh.
This is a children's
book. Yeah. They left that part out.
It's now very stupid that I thought we were about to read an adult's choose your own adventure book. No.
Those do exist. They are weird.
Oh, God. Oh, Lord. All right.
None of them continue. Are about sports. All right. You are the manager of the Bombers, the most surprising team in Major League Baseball. Did you just say hello?
Yeah, I'm the manager. Hello.
I thought I was worried that I'd cut out. And I'm like, no, I'm getting into a groove already.
We're off to a really good start.
I know, guys. This is great.
Go Bombers.
They are the most surprising team in Major League Baseball. For 3 years in a row, the Bombers finished in last place. Then, this season, they hired you.
They all died.
They hired you. And now, here they are, with one game to go, battling for the pennant. Oh, what a great season it's been. Mm-hmm. Who could have expected that you would find a kid in the minor leagues and turn him into as slick a rookie pitcher as Fernando Valenzuela was for the 1981 Dodgers?
Not me.
No, nope. This is not possible. I've never heard of anything like that.
Who would have thought an old slugger everybody else had given up on would produce for you like Reggie Jackson on those great 1970s Yankee teams? And who would have dreamed you could get the last place Bombers fired up and fighting like a ball club managed by Billy Martin or John McGraw?
The Fighting Bombers.
Billy
I like it.
Martin. Oh, my God.
Yes. 1983. And yet none of it will mean much if you don't win today. This is it, the last day of the National League playoffs. And if you beat the Aces, you'll be in the World Series. Win, and you go on to glory. Lose, and you go home.
Oh, I hate my home life.
I got cats everywhere. There's laundry everywhere.
I don't even know my kids.
No. We don't even know your name.
Oh.
So no wonder you had some trouble sleeping last night. No wonder you kept waking up and thinking about strategy for today's game. Some of your decisions were easy. The easiest was that your old slugger Lou Robinson was going to play first base and bat third. What luck that you were able to get him on your team. This was his 14th year in the major leagues, and Lou Robinson was a legend. 5 times he led the majors in home runs. 6 seasons he led them in runs batted in. But for the past 2 years, until you got him, it seemed like he was able to do nothing but strike out with men on base. Everybody said Lou is finished. After all, he was 37 years old when the season began, and most ball players are through when by the time they're 35.
Steroids.
Yes.
Ryan Howard, yeah.
But you had a hunch. And when Philadelphia released Lou and told him to retire.
The Phillies didn't want this guy? And we got him?
I know.
Who is in this front office?
This took a turn.
Other black and white newspaper comic characters are in the front office. We've got Blondie and Dagwood.
Unbelievable. When the Phillies, this is a league-wide informal protocol that when the Phillies drop a guy, he's out of baseball. That's it.
My favorite part is that they released him and told him to retire.
They told him, you need to stop. You need to stop doing what you've been
doing. You're hurting baseball, Lou.
You're hurting everyone. You're hurting yourself and you're hurting everyone. Go see your laundry. Go see your family.
And when Philadelphia released Lou and told him to retire, you asked the Bombers owner, Angry Artie Nash, to sign him. Then you switched Lou from the outfield, where he played his entire career, to first base, where he wouldn't have to run as much and tire himself out before coming to bat.
But when I did all this, I was still drinking a lot of cough medicine before the game. All right? That's to be fair. I'm not responsible for those actions.
Well, it turns out it was a great decision because he was a great fielder, but he also got his batting stroke back.
And I'm so glad that I sat down and broke down the numbers and realized that that decision was the right one, you know, after hours of strategizing. I'm so glad I did that.
I mean, he hit 32 home runs for you this season. Quite a show for an old man.
Very old.
Yes. Lucky he did, too, because there's only one other genuine power hitter on your team. The left fielder, Moose Harrington.
Well, if your name Moose, for sure, yeah.
Oh, sure. Third baseman Billy Sawatowski hits a home run from time to time. And so does catcher Bruce Marshall, but not often. And when a team scratches and claws for victories the way yours does, it sure is nice to win one the easy way once in a while, with one swing of the bat. The Clawing Cats. You loved it when the newspapermen gave your team that nickname.
I loved it? No,
the Clawing Cats. I'm sorry.
I didn't love that. I can tell you for sure right now that I flipped over a full table with a breakfast spread on it.
An angry Artie fired you.
I hired a guy to take care of this person.
That's the way you want your teams to play ball. Bunt. Steal. Squeeze, take the extra base, dive for every ground ball you possibly have a chance to knock down.
Get even the ones you don't have to dive for.
Just do it.
Just dive. Just try to jump on it like a grenade, like a grenade, and scream like it's a grenade.
Get that uniform dirty. Chatter in the infield and cheer on the bench. Slide hard to break up double plays. Take big leads to rattle opposing pitchers.
Make noises like panicked squirrels in the infield to confuse and alarm the other team.
Take chances. Scratch out those runs and make them stand up with tight defense and tough pitching. The Bombers had ball players who could play that way. But until you came along, they had no one to inspire them. No one to give them confidence. No one to let them loose to run and fight and claw.
No one to supply them with cocaine.
Yep. The manager they had before you came here didn't appreciate that kind of game. He never even thought Jet Johnson was good enough to be on the starting lineup.
Did George Lucas name these characters?
I know, right?
Just wait. You still can't believe that. Jet Johnson on the bench.
The slowest guy in baseball.
All Jet Johnson has done for you this year is steal 70 bases and score 100 runs.
Wow, this guy sucks.
When the Jet gets on base, watch out. If the pitcher moves...
He has a gun.
I must kill the queen.
If the pitcher moves an eye off the Jet just for an instant, he takes off and steals. Like a blur. And once the Jet got going this season, so did the other speedsters on your team. Right fielder Skeets Rodriguez. Shortstop Slick Desmond.
Slick, does he have a last name?
No, Slick. His name is Slick Desmond.
He was a flim-flam man outside the stadium. You liked his hand-eye coordination.
A center fielder, Eddie Cooper. Third baseman Billy Sawatowski. Even the catcher, your field captain Bruce Marshall, has stolen a couple of bases this year.
Yeah, but he sucks at hitting. Get out of here, old man.
Yep. Bruce Marshall, you sure thought about him a lot as you tossed in bed last night.
Okay.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Where is this going?
Oh, if you only knew. All season, Marshall was your most consistent hitter. Mr. Clutch. The man who'd come up with a runner in scoring position in a tie ball game and smash out a hit to win it. But that was during the regular season when you won the division title and got into this playoff series for the National League pennant. In the playoffs so far, Bruce hasn't had a hit. Not one hit in four games. In the first playoff game, he popped out with the bases loaded in the ninth inning and you lost by 2 runs.
I remember that night. I punched a hole clean through the wall of my office.
You'll be billed for that later.
Oh, I broke my entire arm. I have very weak hands.
The second playoff game, he struck out twice with men on base. Good thing you had your great rookie pitching in that one, Jerry Crane.
I'm so mad at this guy.
Crane pitched a one-hitter and the Jets stole home, and you won 1-0. Playoff game 3 was fun, an easy win, with old Lou belting 2 homers. And game 4 was a heartbreaker, with shortstop Slick Desmond booting a ground ball to lose it for you. I don't know why his nickname is Slick.
Not so slick, Slick.
Nope. Slick can run and hit, and he hustles like Pete Rose. But in the field, he sometimes makes errors that drive you up the wall.
Like Pete Rose.
Just like Pete Rose. So here we are, game number 5. The last one, the tiebreaker. The one that determines if your Bombers or the Aces win the pennant.
Yep, that's what tiebreaker means.
Yes. This is a book written for children.
I thought it was important that they spell it.
They do that many times. You'll never forget anything. Sometime during the long night, you made the tough decision to drop your captain, Bruce Marshall, down to 8th in the batting order. All season, he's been your number 5 hitter, and he is not going to be happy.
That's right, and his mother, who is very sickly, is coming to the game tonight, and she may not live to see tomorrow, and I'm still dropping him to number 8,
yep.
Even though she may die before the 3rd inning.
Wait, she's going to die tomorrow and she's coming out to the game in public?
She just wants to see him one last time, John. One last time she wants to see him take a few hacks, and I'm making that as hard
as possible. And you're going to drop him to 8?
I hate this lady. You don't understand. That's a whole other book with that backstory.
It's hard to swallow, but go ahead, Liz. Yeah.
But you're not here to make your players happy.
That's right.
You're here.
And I haven't.
You're here to win. Another tough choice was who to pick as your starting pitcher. Most people thought you'd go with the tough little left-hander, Spud Roselli.
How little.
Which feels slightly racist against Italians, if that's possible.
I want you to pitch the complete game.
Thank you. I've never heard that before.
He just didn't eat his mushroom yet. He has to get a little bigger.
That's right.
For a long time, you thought Spud, who won 15 games this year, was going to be your starter. But then a couple of things made you change your mind. Roselli.
Like his name is Spud.
Yeah. Roselli confided to you that his baby daughter is in the hospital.
Oh, my God.
You're afraid that may take some of his attention away.
Yes.
And also, but no fear at all for the small baby girl in the hospital.
Screw her.
We're more concerned about Spud's attention on the mound waning as his little baby daughter fights for her life. So we've got a little baby daughter whose life hangs in the balance and an old lady who is risking her life to come to the ballpark here in this, what do they call it, a tiebreaker?
I've never heard of that,
here?
Ever. I'm so
this
glad
really
they explained
the
it.
Is building.
To be fair, yeah. I did create the whole mother out of thin air. I forgot.
Okay, yes. Fair enough.
Yeah, the mother does not exist in this story, but we can find opportunities to slide
her
in.
We've made it canon.
Yes, this is exactly it. Also,
we didn't even get out of the intro and I was adding supplemental material. I apologize.
Oh my gosh, are we still in the intro?
Well, I told you, the intro is where they introduce you to sort of everyone. After this, we're close to the first decision, and those are only a page or two long before they move to like the next choice. This is just the beginning.
Okay.
Let's see, where was I? Also, most of the best hitters on the Aces are right-handed. Choo Choo Fletcher, Joey Graham, Alexander Roberts, Roger LeClaire. Those guys have been killing the Bombers, and a right-handed pitcher usually has a better chance of giving right-handed batters trouble. Only one of their top hitters, Charlie McGuire, the catcher, bats left-handed, so considering everything, you decided to start with Jackson Barnes, a 24-year-old right-handed pitcher with a good fastball, a terrific slider, and when he can't control it, a wicked curve, and also no baby in the hospital.
I think he stole one of Slick Desmond's last names.
He might have.
And took them both for himself.
Jackson Barnes. Standing in the dugout now, you hear the public address announcer boom the lineup over the loudspeakers in Bomber Stadium. The crowd, your crowd, in the Bomber's hometown cheers each new name. You feel your stomach churning, your fists clenching. You say to yourself, go get him, Bombers. Get him. Kill him. You slap...
Why would you just say that to yourself? Tell them that.
What?
Fire them.
What? Your third baseman calls over his shoulder as the rest of the team jogs onto the field?
Nothing. At all. Just go play.
I have a question. Do we know what our hometown is?
No.
Or do we just know it's not Philadelphia?
It's not Philadelphia.
Shelbyville.
I'm going to say it is Shelbyville. It's the Shelbyville Aces and the Springfield Bombers. Let's say that.
There you go.
You slap the backs of your players. You clap your hands. You scrape the ground with the spikes on your shoes. You know that millions of people are watching on TV. Give them a show, Bombers. The Clawing Cats. No one calls them that.
Oof.
So far, so good. Jackson Barnes has his control. He gets 3 outs in a row. And then, leading off for the Bombers in the bottom of the first, Jet Johnson draws a walk. As the Jet trots down to first base, you're faced with your first decision of the ball game.
Send him.
So that was exactly what I was going to say. Send him.
Not quite yet. Should you have Skeets Rodriguez sacrifice, lay down a bunt, a pretty sure way to move Johnson into scoring position, or should you go for a big inning by having Skeets swing away?
Swing away.
Swing away. All right.
I'm keeping track of our progress. Or at least
okay.
I was when I had things to write with. Here we are. I'm going to keep track of our progress so I can give a short, much shorter than that, recap from the previous week so we remember where we are. So.
Okay. So you'll let us know what happened on the next episode?
We're going to find out what happened now. And then since I've spent so much time reading the intro, let's actually get to a little bit of ball decision.
Okay.
All right. So if you want Skeets to swing, turn to page 8. And to page 8 I am going. Skeets stands at the plate, staring out at Ted Panama, the Aces pitcher.
Oh, God.
Classic Ted Panama.
That's my favorite name so far.
Yeah,
slowly,
really
Skeets twirls his bat in small circles and settles into his stance, still staring at the mound, trying to spot the ball at the earliest instant and follow it toward the plate. Panama winds, throws. The Ace first baseman and the Ace third baseman charge toward the plate, expecting a bunt. The Ace second baseman runs towards first to cover the bag on the bunt. But no! Skeets swings away and slashes a ground ball right to where the second baseman would have been playing if the Aces hadn't expected a bunt.
I knew it.
Your strategy worked. It fooled them. The ball shoots into right field, a single for Skeets. And the Jet, zooms in all the way to third. Now the Jet begins dancing off third base, taking a long lead, then racing back. Skeets leads off first, jumping and jitterbugging. The fans are shouting and cheering. They want to see the Bombers run. Now this is my favorite part. Now in most ballparks, the fans chant "Go go go" when they want base runners to steal or when they want their team to get a rally started.
I do that all the time.
Yes,
yeah.
And the electric scoreboard flashes the same message: "Go go go." But not here. Not since the newspapers began calling your team the Clawing Cats. Here. In Bomber Stadium, no. The fans have a different cheer.
They say meow, don't
no.
they?
No, thank God. They yell something even more awkward. Claw, claw, claw.
Oh, gosh.
And the electric scoreboard lights up with that rallying cry, too.
So our name is the Bombers, but our nickname is the Clawing Cats.
Yes.
Because you have to scratch and claw out so many wins, presumably because your team is inadequate? I don't understand, but...
Yeah. No, 88 Dodgers.
No, it's a bad nickname.
It's terrible. It's really awful. It's really,
on every
really
level.
Bad. It's happening now. You see the words flash on the scoreboard. You hear the chant from the stands. Claw.
I mean, the bomb squad.
The bomb, that's much better.
Would be a great nickname.
Justin, you got to let it go. It's
okay,
what it is.
Okay, all right, all right.
It's what
okay,
it is.
All right, yeah,
should you do it? Should you call for a stolen base and try to really rattle the aces? Should you send Skeets to second? Skeets already has 38 stolen bases this season. If he makes it, you'll have runners on second and third. You'll have two runners in scoring position. And there's also a chance, if the ball gets thrown away or bobbled, the Jet can come roaring in from third base to score a run right now. But if Skeets gets thrown out, you may wreck your chances for a big inning. What do you do? Do you want Skeets to steal or stay at first?
All right, John, here's where I'm at. I feel like this is a good idea. I feel like the book is going to punish us for it.
Yeah, I agree. Like, to keep him at first.
Yeah, just to keep us humble. It would punish our hubris.
Well, you have to remember, too, in the 80s, like, the stolen base was the big thing. So you had Tim Raines, and you had Juan Samuel, and you had Vince Coleman and all that stuff going on. It was like everybody was running. But obviously, it's stupid to try and steal second base in this instance. But you're right. What the book's going to do is, like, he's going to get caught in a rundown, and the runner on third is going to score like a double steal kind of thing. But I think we should hold him at first.
We've got
to be true to ourselves,
yeah,
Justin.
I agree.
All right. To page 15. But we'll have to find out what happens next week.
Okay. All right. That's really good. Good
stay
theater.
Stay tuned.
So we... Stay tuned, everybody. Put your bookmark right there in Hit and Season episode 559, and we'll figure out whether Skeets holding him at first base, whether that was the right decision or not. You know, Justin and I are playing this by the numbers here. So, all right. Do we have time for real quick final thoughts before we wrap up here? Justin, final thoughts from you as we finish up 559.
Hey, no, I've just been waiting a long time to feel good about this team. And, hey, that was they won a couple of games in Los Angeles. Didn't see that coming. I am genuinely enthusiastic. I was genuinely enthusiastic to watch this team in game four. Like I said, it's still early, so I'm encouraged by what I saw on the West Coast. Still trying.
I think that's good.
Yeah,
I think you're right, and I think you're right to feel encouraged. No doubt about it. So, again, if they lose that game on Sunday in the first game, we're flying high right now. So that's important to kind of remember that. Liz, final thoughts from you.
If you have any copies of the other Play It Your Way sports books. The one about the World Series, one about opening day. I'll even take one about pro football. They have one in the Super Bowl and one on a big Sunday night game. If you have any of those, I would love to borrow them and use them for a show or two. Maybe I can do a football one as bonus content. The users can decide.
That's a great idea. Maybe do that over on the Patreon or something like that.
So if you come across any of those books, please let me know on Twitter. I am always there.
At Liz Rocher is where you can find her on the Twitter machine. And folks, that is going to do it for this edition of Hit and Season. And listen, this is, like Justin said, we should be feeling somewhat optimistic about this team, really optimistic, frankly, about the way this team played in Los Angeles. Can they keep it rolling in Philadelphia against the Padres and a rematch against the Dodgers here this week? We are going to learn a lot about this team this week, I think. Hopefully Bryce Harper is back in the lineup on Tuesday night as well. So we're looking forward to watching the Phillies play this week, and that's always a dangerous thing, but we'll see if we are rewarded for our excitement and our enthusiasm. Folks, make sure to check out the Hit and Season Patreon. Go to patreon.com/hittandseason and listen to continued success in the Dirty Inning. Tell your friends and family about the Good Fight podcast feed so they get all of this great Phillies content. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hit and Season.